When will you get real? Well, when people talk like that, it is as if they think I'm living in some different world from them, isn't it? They want me to return to the real one. And on one level, it's not too hard to understand the feeling. Listen to Jason Gardner from the Institute of Contemporary Christianity sum up the mood of the United Kingdom today. He wrote this: "Now, a country whose cultural contours have been shaped by church history desires only to nod to that heritage. Christian tradition is tolerated but not celebrated. It's a little like the great uncle at family parties, whose words used to be full of wit and authority, but now seems antiquated and belligerent. Although his presence is still required, he's often a source of embarrassment." You can understand it, can't you? Do you remember Alistair Campbell, Tony Blair's advisor, famously saying, "We don't do God"? And when Tony Blair had retired as Prime Minister, a professing Christian himself, he explained, "It's difficult to talk about religious faith in our political system. You talk about it, and frankly, people think you're a nutter. When will you get real?" And actually, he's right. I mean, you can sound as if you're in a different world from the one normal people live in. And in one sense, it's always been like this. Listen to what they said about Jesus. They said this to him: "He is demon-possessed and raving mad. He's a nutter. Why listen to him?" They said to him, "When will you get real?" I want to say this this morning. I want to say that Jesus is the reality we all need to face up to. To the Christian who faces this get real question, we need to ask this: have we lined up alongside Jesus and his reality? Or do we need to put our hands up and say, "You're right, I need to get real"? And to the skeptic who asks the get real question, I've got to put this challenge: are you just attacking the soft targets, we deeply flawed Christians? Or have you faced up to just how much reality Jesus is handling? Let me explain as we look at some of the shades of meaning behind the cry to get real. Let's take this one first of all. Get real, a cry for honesty. Now, not at the level of personal morality so much, half-truths and gossip, important though that may be. This is much more on the larger scale. I've just been reading a book called Free of Charge, and at the end of it, the author adds this little postlude, a conversation he had with a skeptical friend. Here's how it went. "Do you really believe all the stuff you've written about?" an acquaintance asked me. "Stuff? What stuff?" "You know, all the stuff about God the giver, about how you're supposed to give as God gives, and especially that when we give, it's really God giving through us. You say that Christ forgives through us, that human beings are sacred dwelling places of God, that they become fulfilled when they resonate with God's love. It seems so unreal, like a religious fairy tale." "I wouldn't call it stuff," I answered defensively. "I don't mean to diss it. Your vision of a life of generosity and forgiveness is beautiful. It's not mine, you know. But it's beautiful as dreams are beautiful. Beautifully unreal. Remember the movie Life is Beautiful? In it, there was a kid in a concentration camp whose father created for him an illusion of living a normal life by pretending that the whole thing was an elaborate game. The life you describe is beautiful in that way, as an ingenious ruse. What you write in this book is one long, comforting, beautiful lie." Lie, a strong word needed to hide the brutal reality. One long, comforting, beautiful lie. When will you get real? See, put it like that, it's the cry, isn't it, of someone who isn't satisfied with comfort for comfort's sake. Not if it's false. It's the cry of someone who isn't satisfied with a beautiful story, not if it doesn't have substance. It's the cry of someone who's willing to face pain, despair, ugliness, if they are the truth. When will you get real? A cry for brutal honesty. And you can understand why people use it of Christians. I mean, we do sometimes use our religion as a kind of comfort blanket to shield us from the ugly realities of life so that we can pretend that they don't happen, or at least they don't happen to us. I've wanted to say it myself sometimes, to those whose super spiritual world seems to leave no room for personal suffering in the fully Christian life. When will you get real? It's just that Jesus answers this cry for honesty. He is brutally frank about the ugliness of the world we live in with its wars and famines and disasters. He's as clear as the new atheists, those secular fundamentalists like Dawkins and Hitchens and Pullman, about the cruelties and the persecutions that can be inflicted in the name of religion. And to be honest, he's considerably more honest when it comes to the corrosive ugliness of sin in each one of us, atheist as well as religious. He doesn't close his eyes either to personal suffering. Look, take hold of a Bible, will you? And just turn to Luke's Gospel, Luke chapter 8. Luke chapter 8 and verse 51. Now, if you know the story, Jesus has been delayed en route to a dying girl. He's been dealing with a chronically diseased woman. And by now, the girl, Jairus' daughter, is dead. And we pick the story up at verse 51 of Luke chapter 8, and we read this. When Jesus arrived at the house of Jairus, he didn't let anyone go in with him except Peter, John, and James, and the child's father and mother. Meanwhile, all the people were wailing and mourning for her. Stop wailing, Jesus said. She is not dead, but asleep. They laughed at him, knowing that she was dead. They laughed at him. They ridiculed him. When will you get real? Get into the real world, Jesus. Face the facts. She's dead. It's just that if you know the story, Jesus is in the real world. He just sees it differently. And as he goes on, he's not offering a comforting illusion, but reality. Yes, he knows he's face to face with a corpse, and what he's got to say is not a beautiful lie. It's reality. Watch how he goes on. They laughed at him, knowing that she was dead, but he took her by the hand and said, "My child, get up." Her spirit returned, and at once she stood up, and then Jesus told them to give her something to eat. Her parents were astonished. And this is reality. He leaves with the dead daughter tucking into the bowl of muesli or whatever it was they gave her. When will you get real? And Jesus is. This Jesus of the Gospels can't just be airbrushed out of the real world of history either, though that's a subject for another time. But if I want brutal honesty, pick up the Gospels, read them. And I'll find it again and again and again. But beware, because Jesus is brutally honest about you and about me, not just about them and life in general. Get real. A cry for honesty. But get real can be another kind of cry too, can't it? Get real can be a cry for relevance. There's something slightly different here. Less a cry for honesty, for facing ugly realities. More a cry for relevance, a demand to get with it. To explain why what you're talking about has any bearing on the world that I inhabit and the life I live. Now, relevance and reality don't always go together. You know, Big Brother may be supremely relevant to millions. And yes, I know Rachel won. But you fear for people if they think Big Brother is getting real. John Humphreys, the Radio Today news program presenter, wrote a book a little while back entitled In God We Doubt, but he subtitled it Confessions of a Failed Atheist. Because for all his lack of belief, Humphreys can't quite throw away his sense of value for religion. Listen to him at one point. Yes, he says, we loathe and fear the fanaticism that leads to a man strapping a bomb to his body and blowing up other human beings. But we should also fear a world in which the predominant values are materialism and consumerism. And the greatest aspiration of too many children is to become a celebrity. It's naive to assume that we will ever return to the days when you had to climb Everest or run the first 4-minute mile to achieve fame. Television has seen to that. But Paris Hilton? The existence of religion can offer some balance in a society obsessed with image, which turns vacuity, shallowness, into virtue. And when Jesus says, a man's life doesn't consist in the abundance of his possessions alone, or when he warns, what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? We don't say to him, when will you get real? He's being timelessly contemporary, isn't he? All the same, the cry of get real is still thrown at the believer, and you can understand why. We do seem behind the times. This summer, as the church debated sexuality all too publicly, a couple of friends of mine, neither of whom would describe themselves as believers, both said to me something like this, when will you get real? Don't you realize the world has moved on from there 10 years ago? And you can see their point. The church passionately debating an issue as if it's still a live topic. And the world has made up his mind about it a decade ago, and the train has long since left the station. Now, I happen to believe the world may find it's got to revisit the station, as its attitudes to sexuality and family life produce their consequences, but that may well be way down the line in the future. I can understand why now they ask, when will you get real? Especially if it means we turn our backs on issues like poverty and injustice. And we Christians do have a tendency to become obsessive about the unimportant. Jesus recognized that. Listen to him again. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You give a tithe of your spices, mint, dill, and cumin, but you've neglected the more important matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. You strain out a gnat, but swallow a camel. Here's Jesus asking, when will you get real? Haven't been able to check this, but it's a frighteningly possible story I came across. In the 1917 Communist Revolution, as the revolutionaries stormed the Tsar's palace gates in St. Petersburg, Christian leaders were meeting just down the street. And you know what they were debating? Vestments. What robes to wear in church. When will you get real? And we can even do it over worthy causes. Get so immersed in them, we can miss the point, the relevance. C.S. Lewis spoke of those who invested all their energies in proving the existence of God. And he went on, as if God had nothing better to do than exist. Well, we live in a generation who finds it all too easy to shrug their shoulders and say, so what? When will you get real? Jesus understands the so what mindset. It's why he stays so stunningly relevant. Even his most outrageous statements can meet the test of relevance. They speak into the deepest issues of life. Purpose and meaning, lostness and confusion, life and death. I mean, look at this one, for example. I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live even though he dies. And you say, when will you get real? But realize Jesus is real. This wasn't spoken as some comfort line to a crowd on a Sunday morning in church. No, it was spoken to an individual, a family friend, A family friend whose brother had died just 4 days previously. The grief still raw, the grave still fresh. I mean, if this is reality, it's the most importantly relevant truth for her to grasp. And a few minutes later, she knows it's reality, as Lazarus is alive again. Gary Habermas is an American professor. He has a couple of doctorates. He has many book titles to his name. He's a professor of philosophy and theology. He's also an expert in the resurrection of Jesus. He frequently debates the evidence for it. But as he immerses himself in the minutiae of the arguments for this central truth to the Christian message, he hasn't forgotten its relevance. At the end of a long interview, when he was being quizzed about evidence, he was asked, what did he think was the importance of the resurrection? And by way of an answer, he just went back a few years to 1995, when his wife Debbie slowly died of stomach cancer. He said, apart from a few weeks, she was home through it all. It was an awful time. He said, but you know what was amazing? My students would call me, not just one, but several of them. And they'd say, at a time like this, aren't you glad about the resurrection? As sober as those circumstances were, I had to smile for two reasons. First, my students were trying to cheer me up with my own teaching. Second, it worked. I knew if God were to come to me, I'd ask only one question. Lord, why is Debbie up there in bed? And I think God would respond by asking gently, Gary, did I raise my son from the dead? And I'd say, come on, Lord, I've written 7 books on the subject. Of course he was raised from the dead, but I want to know about Debbie. And I think he'd keep coming back to the same question. Did I raise my son from the dead? Did I raise my son from the dead? Until I got the point. The resurrection says that if Jesus was raised 2,000 years ago, there's an answer to Debbie's death in 1995. Do you know what? It worked for me. It worked for me while I was sitting there then. It still works today. It was a horribly emotional time for me, but I couldn't get around the fact that the resurrection is the answer for her suffering. I still worried. I still wondered what I'd do raising 4 kids alone. But there wasn't a time when that truth didn't comfort me. Losing my wife was the most painful experience I've ever had to face. But if the resurrection could get me through that, it can get me through anything. It was good for AD 30, it was good for 1995, and it's good beyond that. He finished like this. He said, I believe with all my heart, if there's a resurrection, there's a heaven. If Jesus was raised, Debbie will be raised, and I will be someday too. Then I'll see them both. When will you get real? If it's Jesus you're speaking to, he is. And if it's relevance you're after, we can't handle the issues of life and death without him. He is the proven future. Get real. A cry for honesty. Get real. A cry for relevance. Get real. Here's another shade of meaning. A cry for authenticity. Ravi Zacharias is a well-known Christian apologist, and he writes the foreword to this Amy Orr Ewing book, But Is It Real? I've started reading it. It's great, and as background reading for this series, well worth getting hold of a copy. And he sets it up, really, at the end of his foreword. He tells of a time when he'd been on a university campus speaking in a series of meetings, and on the day he was leaving the city, his host mentioned to him that he'd brought his neighbor, a medical doctor, to the last meeting. She's a skeptic, through and through, he told Ravi. Would you like to know what her response was to your presentation last night? Well, Rabbi Zacharias has been around enough meetings to know that when someone asks you that question, they're going to tell you whether you like it or not. So he sounded enthusiastic, as if he wanted to know. And this was his host's reply. This expressed that medical doctor's reaction. She said this, powerful, simply powerful. I wonder what he's like in his private life. See, that was her one-line response to a three-hour evening. In short, the entire weight of the argument rested for her on the coherence between the argument and the enfleshment of the argument. The reasoning wasn't good enough. The practical impact in the private life of the reasoner was the final test. It's a heart cry for the authentic, isn't it? What's he like in his private life? What's he like at home? What's he like with the family? When will you get real? I mean, it can have this healthy skepticism, can't it? This wariness of arguments and propositions, however persuasiveness, unless there's a connectedness to the whole of a life. And there are times when we Christians will need to put our hands up and say, the way we live, we can need that kind of question. We ask for it even. And I don't just mean that there's a disconnectedness in the way we live our individual lives, one thing in public, another in private, but even the way we live with one another. Now, too often when Christians come together, we act as if the mark of a Christian is to be respectable or to be sorted. We seem to have forgotten that we've got a gospel about a forgiven failure. If I belong to a fellowship group, a small group, and you begin to get to know me and my weaknesses, I'm not looking for you to condone them. But I'm not looking for you to condemn me either as I face them, just to realize you now know some of the detailed reasons why Hugh Palmer needs Christ. Here's one man explaining his struggles with his church family. I fear he wouldn't be alone. He says this, I'm afraid to tell you who I am, because if I tell you who I am, you may not like who I am, and it's all that I have. It's uncomfortable, isn't it? When will you get real? But it may be a surprise to realize this cry for authenticity is echoed by Jesus. Now, turn back to the reading we had, to Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7 and verse 15. You probably recognize we were at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, and the Sermon on the Mount is one long sermon contrasting true and false religion. It is, if you like, one long cry saying, when will you get real? And look at this, verse 15. Watch out for false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they're ferocious wolves. By their fruit, you will recognize them. What's he like in his private life? It's a fair question to ask, says Jesus. Actually, Jesus takes this issue of authenticity even more seriously than we do. Did you notice verse 21? Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only he who does the will of my Father who's in heaven. Only the one whose walk fits their talk. Look how he goes on. Many will say to me on that day, the day when entrance to the kingdom is finalized, many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name? And in your name drive out demons and perform many miracles? Then I will tell them plainly, I never knew you. Away from me, you evildoers. When will you get real? It is a more urgently important question than most people who ask it even imagine. Our eternities depend on it. And the reality that stands the test of time, that stands the test of that day, is somehow linked to this Jesus. I never knew you. How ominous those words are going to sound to the one who thought himself or herself Christian. Depart from me. What a dreadful sentence. When will you get real? And when the question's on Jesus' lips, when he's asking it of us, it's vastly more threatening, isn't it? I met Graham at a Christian meeting that I had been speaking at when he first came up to university. As we spoke afterwards, it was clear he'd called himself a Christian at school sometime before and then abandoned his faith. So I asked him why. And he said to me, I looked around all the Christians in my peer group and I realized not one of them lived out what they claimed to be believing. So I gave it up. Well, I said, what are you doing at this meeting then? Well, he said, I checked on Jesus. And I realized he was the real thing. I couldn't find the flaw in him, so I thought I'd give it another shot. That's the thing about Jesus. You see, read through the Gospels. You'll find him stunningly authentic. Even his enemies can't find fault with him. And at the end, as he goes through the almost unimaginable pain and agony of the execution on the cross, the kind of pain which would allow you to forgive anyone just thinking of themselves. Listen to him as the nails are driven into his hands. Father, forgive them. As the swearing and the mockery aimed at him is interrupted by the thief's plea to remember him. Today, with me, in paradise. As he sees his mother, devastated and deserted, and John, the disciple he loves. Mother, your son. Son, your mother. Take care of her. When will you get real? He is. He preaches love, grace, forgiveness. Well, rip his heart apart on the cross, and what comes out? Love, grace, forgiveness. When will you get real? It is an important question for the believer to face. Am I real? Not just to my image of the respectable, sorted Christian at All Souls, but real to the call of Jesus in the Gospels. When will you get real? In that disturbing way he has, Jesus has a habit of putting the question in the hot seat too. We can ask the question of others very easily, but we will find him asking it of us too. Are you sure you have got real? Faced the world for what it truly is. Faced up to Jesus Christ for who he truly is. Let's pray. Lord, as we move through this series, maybe we pick up your Gospels and read them again. We pray, show us ourselves as we really are, and show us our Savior. Amen.